Okay, so tonight we're going to try to do a little bit to help us define what fruit is. And the term fruit is used 66 times in the New Testament, so it has a lot of different shades of meaning, and we won't be able to talk about all of them, but we're going to kind of follow the organization that Mounts follows in his thesaurus, in his lexicon. And he says that there are three basic ideas that are encapsulated in this idea of fruit. Mounts is a lexicon that we're not as familiar with, but it's a very much more complete lexicon than either Young's or Thayer's, or Strong's. He just goes into a lot of the etymology of these words and the uses of these words in secular literature. So I find him very helpful. Generally, this word, karpos, in the Greek, is translated fruit, and it kind of has the first understanding of this word is that it's what you think of when you think of fruit, like an apple or an orange or some kind of fruit like that. It's the stuff that the tree produces. And he gives a lot of different passages where it's used this way. I like the one in Matthew, the third chapter at verse 10. And again, this is the New International Translation, says the axe is already at the root of the trees. Now, this is talking about what John had to say in his preaching, John the Baptist. And he was talking to the Pharisees. He said, the axe is already at the root of the trees. Every tree that does not produce good fruit will be cut down and thrown into the fire. So I think that's kind of the way that we expect that this term would be used. The tree produces fruit. And sometimes fruit can be either good or bad. You generally don't find the same kinds of fruit on a single tree. I know when I used to go hunting a lot, we found an old abandoned apple orchard. Hadn't been cared for in many, many years. And it surprisingly still bore really sweet apples. They were small, but they were really sweet apples. I don't know if you've ever picked up an apple to eat and it was kind of bitter.
Yeah, we have, because we have Gravenstein's and Granny Smith's, and they're kind of sour, but they're good for applesauce and apple ice.
Yeah, well,
a lot of people like to eat them green.
Not me. You find generally a tree will bear good fruit or it'll bear bad fruit. And it depends on the way that the tree is cared for, usually. And there's a lot to taking care of.
Yes.
All these different kinds of trees. And I should know more about that. I went to the University of Riverside, University of California at Riverside. They had every kind of citrus tree in the world on that campus at the University of California. And the deal was you could pick any fruit you found and eat it. And I have eaten some weird fruit, some weird citrus fruit that I didn't know was generally there. Okay, Matthew 21 at verse 19. This is a statement that Jesus makes. Matthew records what he said Jesus said. he saw a fig tree by the road. He went up to it, found nothing on it except leaves. That was because it was the season when it ought to be bearing fruit. He said to it, "May you never bear fruit again." Immediately the tree withered. Again, that's kind of the way that we expect fruit to be used. In the 21st chapter, he says, there was a landowner who planted a vineyard. He put a wall around it, dug a wine press in it, built a watchtower. He rented the vineyard to farmers, moved to another place. When the harvest time approached, he sent his servants to his tenants to collect his fruit. Now, in this case, some people would suggest that fruit, that the landowner wasn't really trying to collect like figs or olives. He was trying to collect the money that the tenants would get from selling the figs or olives. But it could be that he was trying to collect the figs or olives. So in either case, we pretty much have an understanding of what this means. And then he says, I'm sorry, somebody had a comment. Okay. He says, metaphorically, it's used to refer to our conduct or our actions. So our conduct is called fruit. This is, again, this is John the Baptist. He's talking to the Pharisees and the Sadducees. He said, "You brood of vipers, who warned you to flee from the coming wrath? Produce fruit in keeping with repentance." So I think clearly there he's talking about your conduct. So when you bear fruit, that's talking about the conduct that you show. Okay? It may not be, that's not generally the way that we think about fruit. But I think that's a frequent implication in the way that it's used in the New Testament in particular. Okay? Comments?
Our examples can either bring good or bad.
Yeah, it's our example, and it is even deeper than our example. When we think of examples, we typically think of what other people can see. Sometimes what we produce isn't visible to other people. Most of the time it is, but sometimes our conduct isn't really visible to other people. And that's just as important as the stuff that people see. Because it's that statement that everybody's familiar with. Character, real character, is what you are when nobody's looking.
Right.
So your conduct, when nobody is looking, when nobody knows, nobody sees it, nobody takes any notice of it, but that's the kind of person you are. That's your conduct. And that's a pretty broad statement, that our conduct needs to be what God expects. When God comes to us and he looks at us and he expects to see something, he's expecting to see conduct. And of course, God sees what nobody else sees. So we can in some ways look pretty good on the outside, and we're not so good on the inside. That situation won't last very long, because eventually what's inside will come out.
Right.
Okay. But, you know, every one of us guys that was dating a girl, we pretended that we were a lot different than maybe what we really are. And eventually it comes out in the long run, but I can behave myself for a little while, even though that's not really what I am. But I take great comfort in what Paul told Timothy when he was talking about appointing elders. He said, the good works of some are hidden beforehand, but they go on into judgment. The evil works of some are readily apparent, but they, if they're not readily apparent, they won't be hidden forever. So if essentially there in 1 Timothy 5, I think he's telling Timothy, don't appoint elders hastily. Give them time to demonstrate what they are. And we do demonstrate it, you know, it's just a fact of life. Okay, Matthew 7, verse 15. Watch out for false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they're ferocious wolves. By their fruit, you will recognize them. Do people pick grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? And the answer is no. So your fruit ultimately will show what kind of person you are. And it can work both ways. If you're a good person, you will ultimately be identified as a good person. It's like, you know, when you hurt, when you don't feel good, you get a little snippy and you're not very pleasant to be around. I'm not pleasant at all to be around when I'm sick. That's not the kind of person I am. But when I'm sick, Kim will tell you, I'm like a mangy old dog. I need to go out and get under the porch and just stay there until I feel better. And don't anybody come close to me because I'll bite you.
Does she lock you in your bedroom?
Yes, she would like to sometimes.
Go to your room.
I'm a really bad patient, but that's not the kind of person I am. And so I think sometimes when we're under stress and we're things are just falling apart around us, we say and do things that aren't reflective of who we are.
That's what I'm like when I get a recording and I say, representative, please. Representative, please. Representative, please. And then I hang up the phone.
Yes.
So, yes.
Yeah.
That comes out. Well, I try not to be that way, but it drives me nuts.
And to the extent that we become more Christ-like, then we can learn to inhibit those kinds of responses better.
Now, I so try. Far, huh? I try. I'm not like that with anything else, but boy, that drives me nuts.
The phone when you know you're not really talking to a person.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we can change your password if you want. I didn't ask for that. Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, sometimes it comes out when you don't want it to.
So, That's a matter of bringing the thoughts into bondage to Christ.
Yeah.
And the better that we, the more that we do that, that's producing fruit. Is we bring ourselves closer to Christ and we bring more and more thoughts into bondage to Him, that's producing fruit.
I do really good on the room and pray a lot, but that, I will say, I have to really learn not to get angry at the recording. So the next time I get on the phone, I will pray about it. Please help me, Lord, to be,
stay cool.
Well, you're probably doing better than you used to be.
Oh, well, yeah. I don't know about that in that occasion. But yeah.
Well, that's the kind of fruit that we don't often think about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, getting better at controlling those thoughts. I remember when I was a school psychologist, I would get teachers that was, you know, and we had kids that would get in five fights in a day. And I'm thinking, whoa, we've got to do something. And you work with this kid and you get him down to the point where he's only getting in three fights in a week. And everybody is feeling, hey, we're making progress here, you know. That's bearing fruit.
Yes, right.
It's not where you want to get it. It's not where you ultimately want to wind up. But sometimes we have to remember that that is bearing fruit. Getting better at controlling our thought patterns and how they creep out into conduct, that's a matter of bearing fruit. And I've known some people that were just plain old evil. Was watching a documentary last night on, it was on forensic files. And they were talking about two guys that I knew intimately, Artie Chiuli and Gustafson. They were both in prison for killing a guy. And I busted R.D. Chiuli when he was in high school. He wasn't very far out of high school when he went to prison. In fact, the police came to arrest him. He was still in the school. And I'm the guy that talked him into going down to talk to the police.
Did they have you in the forensic files?
No, I wasn't mentioned, thankfully. But he... From prison, he arranged for a bomb to be sent to a kid that had testified against him and killed the kid's father and just blew up the face of his mother. The kid was not at home at the time.
Oh, wow.
So he sent a mail bomb to them. For a while, the postal authorities and the FBI searched all the mail that we got.
Oh,
because I had been involved in putting R.D. Chiuli in prison. He was one of those kids that was, he was a bad person. And everything he did reflected that. So that's conduct. And then, fruit is used in a sense that we even less frequently talk about. It's a benefit, or it's a profit, or a reward. And this is what we get. Okay? It's used that way in Romans 6 at verse 21. And this is in the context of Paul talking about continuing to sin. And he makes that famous statement. He says, what shall we do? Shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? God forbid. That's the way he starts Romans 6. In verse 21, he says, what benefit did you reap at that time from the things that you... Excuse me, that you're now ashamed of. Those things result in death. The way that you used to live, what fruit did it produce for you? It's not fruit that we produce for God, or for other people. This is fruit that we produce for ourselves. It's a benefit. Or perhaps it could be a reward. When we say the wages of sin or death is death, that's the idea of sin produces a fruit for you. It's a, well, you wouldn't call it a benefit, but it's something that you get out of sin. It produces death. And none of us want that. Okay? Now, it can also produce a benefit for us in that we like what we become. This is, let's see, got to turn my page. This is Philippians 4, verse 16. He says, even when I was in Thessalonica, he's talking to the church in Philippi, and they had been often involved in helping the Apostle Paul. This is the last passage that I have listed there. He says, even when I was in Thessalonica, you sent me aid more than once when I was in need. Not that I desire your fruit. What I desire is that more be credited to your account. I've received full payment. I have more than enough. I'm amply supplied now that I've received from Epaphroditus the gift that you sent, or the fruit that you sent. They're a fragrant offering, an acceptable sacrifice, pleasing to God. So bearing fruit in this final sense is something that makes us feel better. It's not something that we do so that other people benefit. It's not even something that we do so that God benefits. It's something that we do that benefits us. Okay, so thoughts about the general uses of this term fruit. The fruit that we bear. Anybody at home? You look like you had something to say, Lenny.
No, I'm good.
Okay. I think, Jane, you look like you're pounding on your computer trying to get the mute button to unmute. Okay. So, couple of things that this makes me think about. Each of us bears fruit. Does my fruit always look like your fruit?
Not necessarily.
You're saying no.
Not necessarily, because, I mean, they could be the same thing if you're doing something good for someone else or that. I mean, those would be the same.
Okay.
I guess it just depends on... I'm not good at answering.
Me either, but how you do things, this might not be the way I do things, but we could be doing the same thing, just in a different way.
For the
I mean,
same
that's,
reason.
That, yeah, that's what I think.
Okay, okay. Anybody at home have any thoughts? Your fruit is not necessarily the same as my fruit. Well, that's a good point. What I was thinking of is that second kind of meaning where it's our conduct is improving.
Right.
And I may have certain things that need improving that you don't have. And you might have things that I don't have that you need to work on. So in that sense, it's always going to be different for all of us.
Right.
I may not have a problem with cursing and swearing. That may not be my problem. That might be somebody else's problem.
Right.
Or I may not have a problem with addiction to drugs or something like that. But you might. And to the extent that you can control that better with God's help, then that's bearing fruit. So I think it's really important for us to remember that not everybody bears fruit the same way we do.
And when you look for at a new Christian, say, they have a lot of changes that they have to make in their lives still. So they would have more things to accomplish.
Yeah.
More problems to
face. Yeah, well, really interestingly, it could be that they have to make some major changes. They may not have to make as many changes as I do.
That's awful.
And here's the thing, and we'll talk about it when we talk about pruning and kind of the idea that if you start bearing fruit, God's going to prune you more so that you can bear more fruit. And sometimes we think, why is all of this happening to me? Look at Eileen. She's got way farther to go than I do. You need to be cutting on her.
That's right.
But I really do think that the closer we get to God and the more we bear fruit, the more our conduct changes, the more God has to cut to keep us bearing fruit. And so we'll bear more fruit in the future.
I just think, I don't know, this might not have anything to do with it, but I just think Christians think totally different than worldly people.
Well, that's true.
We just think differently. And I'm not bragging or boasting, but I just being around other Christians too, it's such a difference in being with all of you than going out with our car friends or people that we grew up with or something, you know. And believe me, I'm on my toes because I'm trying to have good conduct.
Yeah. you know, I was reading something that talked about the kind of the approach that Christianity brings to everything. And they were focused on the idea that Christianity turns the world upside down. The really famous people, the really rich people, those are the people that have what they need. Those are not the people that Jesus came for. Jesus came for the prostitutes and the publicans and the sinners. And the more we appreciate where we are, the more we appreciate what God does. And they made an interesting point. I haven't really considered it before, but they said in the Roman Empire, if you were executed as a thief, you were the lowest of the low, okay? And think about Jesus being crucified.
Yeah.
They make the point that in art, when Jesus is depicted in the first 4 centuries, artists generally depicted Jesus as triumphant, which is kind of buying into the Roman viewpoint. And it wasn't until the 4th century that you started seeing depictions of Jesus on the cross suffering, because that just, that turns the whole notion of the world upside down. And people weren't ready for that. People just couldn't wrap their head around that in a way. And I'm not an art aficionado. Some people may have a better appreciation of art than I do. And Amelia's sister is an art historian.
Oh.
And I kind of want to talk to her about that observation. To see if that's really true or not. I just thought that was a really...
Yeah, that'd be interesting to know about, yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, kind of an interesting observation.
Yeah.
And a lot of times when we talk about bearing fruit, we talk about converting other people.
Yes.
That's kind of where we immediately go. And that makes the fruit something that's outside of us. It's the fact that I convert someone really doesn't say anything about me. But the more important fruit is the fruit that I'm bearing in myself. So we'll talk about that a little bit more as we go through this discussion. That's just a thought to kind of pique your thinking, make you consider that a little bit.
Understand that. I'm converted to the one person I did left the church, so.
I don't know why we have that tendency.
Well, I think because that's how fruit is preached a lot of times.
It is.
I mean, if you're not bearing fruit, you're not bringing people to Christ. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so, I don't know. I don't feel very fruitful. I can tell you
that.
I don't either.
I think that's a mistaken impression of what Jesus is saying when he says, I'm the vine, you're the branches. Bear fruit in me. I'm never going to be the vine. And if I think that me converting other people is the fruit that I'm supposed to be bearing, that turns me into the vine. And I'm not the vine. I'm just a branch. And everybody has to have this relationship with Jesus themselves. And then once they have this relationship with Jesus, then they bear fruit. Okay? Now, I think it's important for us to think about helping other people come to know Jesus. But I think that's kind of a secondary consideration. Our primary consideration is what it means for us.
Really? Because I kind of think that I'm selfish. I mean, I know I have to learn and my heart has to be good. I'm not saying that, but I just feel like if I don't convert people, I'm just not doing the right thing. I just feel like I'm not a good example or whatever, and I really am trying hard and I'm trying to do the things.
Remember, Jesus didn't convert everybody he talked to either.
Yeah, I know.
I mean,
but it's so, you know, you get so discouraged because you love the people.
Oh yeah.
And you just, it's, I mean, it took me years. I was 32 before I became a Christian, and there's lots of people that talk to me too. So I probably frustrated them too. But you know, but
sure. But I think about Jesus spending all that time with Judas, and Judas still betrayed him.
That's true.
And think about Adam and Eve. All the time he spent with Adam and Eve in the garden. And they had this great relationship. And came down to it.
Yeah.
they chose something else. So, yeah, I think it's important that we live our faith, and other people will see it, and we have to be able to tell them why we live the way that we live, but not everybody's going to believe them.
Right. Well, and I've said this many times, a lot of people I know think they are living it, and truly they're not, but I'm doing it my way, and God is happy with me, and you know, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I mean, I deal with that a lot.
Oh yeah, all of us do. Some of us deal with it. I mean, you deal with it closely in your family. I don't have to deal with that closely in my family, but boy, how tough it is when people that you love so deeply don't seem interested in the things that belong to God. And you think, am I just not showing them how important
exactly.
this is?
Exactly, I think that all the time.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, with my kids, and because I have really good kids. They all are hard workers. They do things for other people, but they won't come to church, and it just breaks my heart.
I know. Yeah. I know, and I know how really hard that. Well, I don't. I can't say I know how hard that is.
And they won't even explain to me. I mean, if it's gotten to the point where my daughter, especially, if I even bring church up, almost she says, "Mom, you know I don't want to talk about that." And so, if you reach a point, what do? I just keep trying to give them a good example by they know not to plan things on Sundays or you know Wednesday nights, and they don't give me a hard time if I say, "Well, I have something to do at church." And
yeah, and you know, Rick has always been very supportive of Eileen,
And everybody loves him, so he thinks he's fine.
Yeah.
And he is wonderful. I'm not belittling him in any way. But
he is a good person.
But so was Cornelius. Yeah. Look at Cornelius.
Doss
Bradford called him Cornelius all the time.
We had a friend who she worshiped with us for a long time, married this wonderful guy. They were married. They're still married. I have no idea how long they've been married. And Phil kind of reminds me of Rick. Anything that was going on at church, he was always there. You know, he came and dug the weeds out of the flower garden and everything like that. She baptized him.
She did?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They retired and he was baptized, and it's just like...
Now, see, I asked somebody one day if I could have baptized Chris when he was 9 and he wanted to be baptized and the preacher wouldn't do it. And I said, I should have just taken him home and talked to him and baptized him. They said, you can't do that. It's too late now, obviously.
Right.
But why couldn't I have done that?
I don't know.
But they insisted, nope, you couldn't have done that. You can't be the baptizer. Okay.
Okay.
Because I'm a woman. Okay.
Yeah, because you're a woman. So that's one of those things where everybody has to come to their own conclusion.
True. But I was, you know, I was fairly young in my, you know, in my belief too. Mm-hmm. And 9 years old, I figured if he died, he'd be with God, but if he felt, you know, if he felt he wouldn't, that's, you know, that's my bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know the answer to all of those. I just don't know.
I wasn't trying to be melodramatic.
No, that's okay. It's okay. I understand that.
Feel that way.
Yeah.
Okay. Second question. Is bearing fruit a one and done kind of thing, or do you think it's something that we do for the rest of our lives?
Oh, for the rest of our lives,
you know? Okay. How about you guys? Think it's a one and done, or constantly trying to bear fruit.
They're not answering. Fruiting in our lives.
Oh. We're always striving to bear fruit.
Right.
In all that we do. It's a growing process. And we grow as Christians in our service to the Lord by bearing fruit.
Right. And I really do think, you know, just sort of keep this in the back of your head, because the last class that we'll do together, we're going to talk about how the more fruit you bear, the more God prunes, so that we'll bear more fruit. And that tells me that it's not a one and done thing. We're always trying to bear fruit. So sometimes people get the impression from what John the Baptist said, bring forth fruits worthy of repentance. That almost sounds like it's a one and done kind of thing. And it's not. It's a constant striving to improve our conduct and to bring more and more thoughts into bondage to God. And the odd part about it is the people who are bearing the most fruit are the people who sometimes think that they're not bearing enough fruit.
I think Carolyn felt that way sometimes, even though she was definitely, I think she felt that, you know, that she wasn't always.
Yeah, she was if there was any godly woman that I ever knew, it had to be Carolyn. It's like somebody said about somebody else that I don't think you know, said she's so good she doesn't even have to try to be good. And I think that's the way Carolyn was. She just, but like you said, if you asked her, are you bearing fruit? She would always say, I need to bear more fruit. Mm-hmm. I need to be doing better. The people who aren't bearing fruit don't think that they have to do better.
Well, even if you encourage someone and they became baptized, you still are going to be bearing fruit by helping them to grow in
Christ.
Right.
Right. And by your bearing fruit, by changing yourself.
Yes.
And
well, that's what Dean said. Wasn't it last Sunday? He said, since he's been doing Philippians, that he said, I changed a lot. He said, I learned a lot about myself and what I'm to do and what I'm not supposed to do. And that's why we come here. I mean, yes, we study, but we come here and we grow, you know. We grow.
Right, right. And I think that's primarily the job that the elders do for us. They keep us well fed, and to the extent that they can keep us well fed and constantly growing, then we're going to be bearing fruit. But if you don't feed and you don't eat, then you're not going to bear fruit. Kim tells me that maybe this is wrong, but I think she's all wet. We eat as much as we need to eat. It's like a little baby. When they're hungry, they'll eat. If we're not hungry, we're not going to eat. And to the extent that we're really bearing fruit in ourselves, we want to eat. And it's always going to be that way. So we need to look at, and oddly enough, we don't we don't look at other people in terms of how much they're eating, because they may be eating a lot that we don't know about, but we look at them in terms of the fruit that they're bearing. Are they becoming better people? Is their conduct becoming more and more like Jesus? And I think that's an important idea. Not to focus so much on how much they're eating, but to focus on how much they're growing. And if they're growing, the eating will come. You know, Kim was always very good at reminding me that if the kids are hungry, they'll eat. And they will be hungry. You just want them to eat good stuff. So don't take in a constant diet of snack food, because that doesn't help you grow very much. So
it helps you grow too much. in the wrong way.
Our candy drawers helping me grow a lot. And the ice cream drawers.
Y'all don't talk about getting fat.
I know it doesn't apply.
My pants keep getting shrunk every time I take them to the cleaner.
Okay. We're hungry for the word, so we come here and we study and read it.
Yeah, you do. Okay, next week we're going to talk about bearing fruit by sharing with those in need.